Welcome to Ed Show 89. I'm here to, take you through the rest of the show. Coming up, we have a really cool interview on virtual receive side scaling. And to give you that interview, I'm going to hand you over to basically a server hugger, but also a cloud lover.
Oh, nice.
It's Rick.
I'm a server hugger and a cloud lover. I like that.
You got to love
that
intro.
New tagline I can use.
Absolutely. You got to love that.
Coming up after the break, I'll be talking to Gabriel Silva, who's on the team that designed and worked with VRSS and also VMQ. Mm-hmm. But I believe we have a couple of news tidbits that we want to share.
Yep. Or,
what do you want to call this? The stuff we've done this week or something
The stuff
like that?
That Microsoft has done this week.
Cool.
We can't really call it news. It's not all newsworthy, but in the Microsoft world, actually, it's kind of important. We're starting to ship things more quickly. This is the place to keep up to date.
You got it. First off the bat, we have the general availability of Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager. This was available in pre-release capabilities beforehand on Azure, and you can basically configure a set of machines to fail over and replicate to another site. Using Hyper-V Recovery built in, but then you augment that by having basically your plans and your criteria of what would be that failover state and which order the machines would start in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, stored up inside Hyper-V Recovery Manager inside your Azure subscription. And basically, you would have to go in and intervene and actually kick it off to be able to do something, or you could tie it into System Center. Long story short, it's available. You can use it now. You can pay for it for part of your subscription and be able to protect your resources.
And the next item we have along the list is coming straight out of the Firehose. If you don't know the Firehose blog, it is the place to find out, well, tons of information about Microsoft, far too much to really pay attention to. But iOS devices, something that close to my heart is managing access to other people's devices.
I was about to say, iOS is close to your heart? What's going on here?
Well, you know, the world is changing out there. There are more devices that we need to be able to manage. And what's important here is that we've actually got a capability whereby people are able to access everything inside of a link conversation that they would access from their normal desktop device, their laptop device, any other kind of device that they're using.
It's now built in it and capable for a link perspective. I don't have an iDevice to be able to try this out on, but I'm sure it works.
Yep.
OneDrive was all a titter at the beginning of the week talking about this.
Yep.
OneDrive's now available. It's the new rebranded, renamed capabilities. And one thing that's not on this particular slide right here, but it's kind of interesting, is everything you liked about the old version, which is the artist formerly known as SkyDrive, and more. And we're not saying what the and more is.
Yep.
So you got to stay tuned for that. But the OneDrive blog is the place to do it. Mm-hmm. They have a cute little video that explains it. And so, you know what? Let's go ahead and roll that quick little video here and talk a little bit about OneDrive in about 30 seconds or less.
So OneDrive for everything in your life. What about your business life though? How does that change? Well, SkyDrive Pro is now OneDrive for business. OneDrive for everything in your life.
That's a good segue.
Yeah?
I like that one. Nice and easy.
Yep. I found this.
This
is
neat.
This was cool.
This is
really cool.
So in case you've seen me at conferences before, I normally carry a very large telephoto lens on my Nikon D90. I've recently adopted the 1020 solution now for point and shoot. It actually does some really, really good stuff. But when you told me this blew my mind, man. This was insane.
Yeah.
We have Martin Hammer. I'm gonna absolutely butcher his name. Martin
Hammerly.
He's Swedish.
He's
Swedish.
Yeah.
But basically, he came back with a particular contest that Nokia was running about being able to take interesting photos and shots with their 1020. And he's rigged up a freaking
helicopter.
That's
the only
basically,
way to describe
it's
got a helicopter.
UEV, I guess it is.
Yep.
Unmanned flying
aerial
drone
vehicle
of some kind.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's kitted up and equipped up with the 1020 and a variety of other things. And this guy's apparently, you're saying, flown up to like 10,000 feet and taken aerial photos and stuff like that.
Yeah. He normally puts his DSLR onto this thing and then flies it up there, but he's done it with the 1020.
Wow.
He's also just used Nokia software. Or Nokia's. Sorry, I've got to start calling it Nokia, right? He's just started using Nokia software to do all of the edits on the images as well. Fabulous thing. And you know what? How many of those of us out there actually have one of those devices? Well, maybe not so many. How many of us in the IT industry use a DSLR.
Yes.
It is our hobby. So right. Kind of cool to see.
And we will
out
point out, just for kudos, that Martin actually is an IT manager for a company in Sweden. So very, very cool.
He is an IT guy.
And wrapping it up, I think we should cut over to the Gabriel Silva interview, my friend.
Yep.
So we'll be right back after the break. Hey, it's Rickster CDN from The Edge Show, and today I have Gabe Silva.
How you doing, Rick?
Thanks a lot for letting me in your office, man.
Hey, no problem.
I appreciate it. You can see a little bit about the collage of what's going on in the office for a little bit of personality. There's some really cool stuff on the shelves and everything else. I'm sitting on a couch, but you can't see that, obviously. What team do you work on, man?
I work on Windows Core Networking. So I work a lot on basically the internet, the TCP/IP stack, and what's going on in Windows and Windows Server.
So Bob Coombs suggested I come and talk to you, or Bob Combs, sorry, suggested I come and talk to you about VRSS, about VMQ, and about networking stack and changes and stuff like that. So I'm hoping you can show me some stuff that's pretty cool that a lot of people don't even know is already built into what it is that we do with Windows Server.
Yeah, so what I work on is network offloads, VRSS, VMQ, RSS. They're all technologies that take network packets coming into your computer and expand it to multiple processors. Mm-hmm. So one of the technologies I worked on in the most recent release was VRSS, and that was expanding a technology RSS or C-side scaling to a VM. So do you want me to expand on RSS, VMQ?
Well, you know, not everybody knows what VRSS is and what VMQ kind of stuff does. Which would be easier to start with, the RSS piece, VRSS, or the VMQ piece? What do you think?
Let's start in the very beginning with RSS.
Okay.
Because they kind of build upon each other. So
why does someone care about RSS?
What RSS does is, as computers started to gain more and more processors, so it started off with one processor, but then there became the notion of these multi-core systems. So what we wanted to do with RSS is we wanted to take advantage of the multiple cores for processing network traffic. RSS, what it stands for, is receive side scaling. So in the earlier days, Windows 2003, we released this Windows Scalable Networking, and what it did is it introduced RSS, so when network packets come into your system, they no longer hit just one processor, but they get expanded to multiple processors. Mm-hmm. So that's how RSS came about, so you could actually utilize all the processors in your system. The next step was VMQ. So there's this whole notion of virtualization and having multiple systems on one host. RSS was good for one host, so you would have multiple traffic, TCP, it's actually separated by TCP flows. So it would go and it would put certain flows on certain processors. Well, now that you have multiple VMs inside of a host, you can no longer really isolate flows from VM1 to certain processors and flows from VM2 to certain processors. So we introduced the notion of virtual machine queues. And what virtual machine queues does is it actually affinitizes the VM NIC and the traffic destined for one VM to a single processor inside the host. So each VM was now assigned one processor to do all its network processing. And in this way, you could scale multiple VMs and be guaranteed that they would get at least one processor in the host and then their own processing inside of the VM.
Okay, so heavy intensive network workloads, let's say an Exchange or something like that, or a SQL database that's going off and has a workload on a physical piece of hardware, it's going to be using RSS to dynamically put the network traffic where it needs to go.
That's
on the RSS side of things.
Exactly.
It complicates things when we have virtualization in place with a hypervisor, because it would jam up and just go into one area, into one core. Is that where the bottleneck would end up being without these new technologies that we have?
Yeah, so one thing that you have to make certain is you can have a hypervisor and still use RSS. It's the second that you introduce a virtual switch in your system that VMQ actually gets switched on and RSS gets switched off.
Oh, okay.
Because the virtual switch is then going to do the routing to the multiple VMs inside of the system. Mm-hmm. So your VMs won't have internet connectivity until you actually introduce a switch and connect them to the switch and the outside and the physical NIC.
Oh, okay. So have there been any changes since we've been introducing this on 2012 R2 side of things versus 2012? Have there been improvements? So what sort of changes have happened?
VMQ underwent some changes in Windows Server 2012. Mm-hmm. So there was static VMQ, and now we have dynamic VMQ. And what dynamic VMQ does is it still guarantees that a VM will have at most one core, but if two VMs are not using too much network traffic and they're not really utilizing a whole core, maybe 20%, and let's say VM2 is using 30%, what VMQ will do is it'll coalesce those two VMQs onto one core. So you're only using one core at 50% if you add them up, mm-hmm. rather than having to use multiple cores and use extra power for the two cores. And then as that utilization starts to rise, so say VM1 starts getting nailed with traffic, we'll actually move that VMQ back off the core and give it its own processor to do network processing for mm-hmm. the VM switch.
Very cool. How about a demo? Because I got the concepts down.
Sure.
How about you actually show me something?
Sure. Let's go ahead and jump on. I'll show you right now what we can do with VMQ. To show off VMQ, what I'm going to do is I have a tool here called NTTTCP, which we actually use to simulate web workloads. So I have it set up here as the receiver. What you'll see here is we have two systems connected back to back. On this receiver, I actually have a VM set up with NTTCP running. I have the receiver pretty much, I have the command line already entered in. So what I'm going to do is off the screen here is I'm going to get the sender and start sending traffic to this receiver. And what you're going to see is as soon as traffic starts flowing, here we go. With VMQ, there's only one processor active inside of the host. So there's the affinitization of network traffic to one CPU for the one VM. So this is your host task manager. You can see that the traffic is being processed on CPU 0. And inside of the VM, you can see that there's only one core really doing the network processing, and it's pegged. So with VMQ, we were able to better distribute cores for VMs, but they couldn't go further than processing on one CPU. So now that I showed you VMQ, that's what we had in Windows Server 2012. In Windows Server 2012 R2, we actually wanted to improve on VMQ. As you saw, there were bottlenecks inside the host. We were limited to one core, and bottlenecks inside the VM, again, limited to one core. So we wanted to be able to expand that out and have a VM be able to use multiple cores in the host and both inside the VM. So basically expanding RSS into the VM. So we introduced a new feature called VRSS. And with VRSS, you're now able to turn RSS on inside the VM, expanding to multiple cores, and that's used just like it would be in a physical host. So you can pretend that VM is just a physical host, nothing's going on in the host. And as soon as you turn on RSS inside the VM, you'll automatically get spreading inside the host as well. So we introduced logic into VMQ to actually spread from one core up to 16 cores. So I have a demo of that as well. I'll go ahead and show you that now. Okay, so now that you saw what VMQ could do, I want to show you what we changed in Windows Server 2012 R2 in order to eliminate that bottleneck of one CPU. So we introduced VRSS, and enabling VRSS is as easy as jumping into your VM, setting the network adapter RSS keyword to true. RSS is now enabled on this machine, so we'll come back to the CPU, come back to our NTTCP session, set up the receiver, and I'm going to have the sender start sending traffic. So it takes a second to load up, but for this demo, we're simulating 128 TCP connections, and right off the bat, you can see that RSS is kicked in inside of the VM. So now you have RSS inside the VM, and if you remember, with VMQ inside the host, you only saw one core doing network processing, and here you can see that we're now doing processing on four different cores, and our throughput inside of the VM is at 10 gigs for a 10 gig card. So we're no longer bottlenecked by the OS, we're bottlenecked by the hardware. So now that I've showed you the demos on VMQ and VRSS, I just want to point out that VRSS is able to expand the throughput to a VM from right around 3 gigs all the way up to 10 gigs on a 10 gig card. We have confirmed that it can go higher in throughput with a 40 gig card, but the results vary depending on the CPU of the computer. So that was one of the big improvements we did in Windows Server 2012 R2.
Now, how about if anyone has any other questions or any other resources you can point to or stuff like that about VMQ or about VRSS? Do you have anything lined up?
I actually have a blog post that I've written on VMQ. We've had a series of questions on how it works, on the issues. So it's a three-part series that I can go ahead and show you now. In case you guys have any questions on VMQ or any lingering issues, I've actually written a series of blogs to help. So it's a three-part series. The first blog goes over the reasoning design and proper configuration of VMQ. The second blog goes into static versus dynamic VMQ, why we actually implemented dynamic VMQ, and also integration with other features such as NIC teaming. And the third goes into VMQ performance monitoring and troubleshooting of issues. So feel free to use the blogs as a resource, and you can also contact me if you have any questions.
Hey, thanks, Gabe. I appreciate you taking the time to explain this and let me in your office and show me around a bit. Thanks a lot for having me in.
No problem. Thanks for having me on the show.
So you can see Rick's already back from the office of our colleague there, and we are done with this particular show. You can follow us, as always, on the Twitters that you'll see located underneath this video player, but also you'll see the comments.
Send us an email if you like as well for some comments and ideas, edge@microsoft.com. And if you actually want to follow us on Twitter, the show is @TNEdge. I'm Rickster CDN.
I'm Cy Monster.
And we'll see you next time.